Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
Hello, and welcome to Real Stories. You're listening to Tanya the Communication Doctor, and I'm so excited to have on my show today, Kevin Hempstead. Now, Kevin Hempstead is the owner of Balanced Life Hackney Wick, does one-to-one counselling, alternative therapies, and corporate wellbeing, and also has now started a project with Snow Camp Charity. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you so much, Tanya. I really appreciate you inviting me on. Thank you.
Oh, it's so lovely to talk to you today, and I'm so excited for my audience to hear your story. So I'm going to fire away, and my first question to you is, how did you get into this line of work?
So it kind of began 15 years ago. I was deep in addiction, drink, drugs. My life was kind of going nowhere. And I'd fought this battle for a long time. And my sister was starting a counselling course. And I'd had this urge to go back to college and to continue some sort of education. And I wanted to spend more time with her. So I kind of tagged along as such. And something within that first introduction to counselling really, really bit me. And I think it was probably the teacher, because she was just the most amazing woman. And she kind of had this real lovely energy, and she was awake, and she believed in me. And so there started my journey, which took me on a personal quest of kind of, I did a lot of self-growth workshops, self-development work, actually then got into NA, AA, got into my recovery. And, you know, that's where it was born. And 15 years later, nearly 15 years clean, that's kind of where the journey began.
You know what, Kevin, you've gone straight in there. Thank you for being so honest and open with me. That's really great that you kind of found this teacher who was so-called, you described her as being awake. What do you mean by that?
You know, she was just, she had this wonderful energy of aliveness. You looked at her and she just had this wonderful empathy, compassion and spirituality that was so attractive. And, you know, she just gave this energy of real love and care, I suppose. And there was something about that that for the first time for a long while, someone believed in me. And that was the real key, I think.
You know what? That's so beautiful. The fact that you just said that she's awake, I had to ask you that question because I know some people don't understand that, because some people may be listening who are awake and some people may be listening who aren't so-called awake. And it's interesting how sometimes you have to go through so much turmoil before you come to that point that you realize, oh, I want to change my life and I want to do something different. And what you also said there is that she believed in you, and that's so interesting because as human beings we always want to be acknowledged. I listened to something on Oprah's show, because Oprah does a lot of interviewing, and she said that everyone that she interviews wants to feel like they are acknowledged. So when you just said that to me there, it really resonated to me in terms of feeling like, you know, she actually believed in you. It was a real powerful moment.
Oh, it really was. And, you know, I think she gave me the gift that she actually heard me.
Yes.
She listened to me. She heard exactly what I was saying. And that something within that drove this passion to then kind of become a therapist. But also what it showed me was that because she enlightened me on her journey and where she'd gone and how she'd got there, I was determined that I was always going to look very deeply at myself before I even attempted, no matter how quickly I passed exams and whatever happened, I would not sit in a chair opposite someone as a therapist, unless I've done a real deep searching within myself and a real understanding of self, so that my personal growth was really strong. Because I believe we have to bring this into the room when we're blessed and we're given this opportunity to work with people, to share a journey of their lives with them. And if we haven't looked at our own lives, then it's we're asking them to do something that we're afraid to do. So I really wanted to embark on this journey of self-discovery that took me a lot of years and took me all over the world. And I was lucky enough to be around groups of people who were wonderfully loving, caring and supportive. And so the journey unfolded. It wasn't easy, but it broke down a lot of my conditioning and it broke down a lot of my self-defeating beliefs.
You know what? That's really, really, really honest. And I love the fact you said that she heard you and that led you into becoming a therapist yourself and your self-discovery. I'm going to go a little bit back though, because I really want to get a sense of your story. So I just want to ask you to go back a little bit from before you were so-called woke, before you came to that moment. If you look back on yourself and what your home experience was, how did it all start for you? What got you into the drugs, the drinking? How did that all start for you?
You know, I was born in Hackney. And I was born at a time where within that East End conditioning that really wasn't me. You know, I loved education. I really had this passion for education. And I was gifted with a mum who taught me to read, write, my times tables at a very, very young age. So she gave me this gift of her time and of education from a woman who kind of hadn't had that given to her. She wasn't a teacher. She wasn't, you know, she was an East End woman who, that real matriarch of a family, really, the real strong essence of a family. And so within that, then that conditioning of what I was supposed to be to what I was so different. And I kind of had to reinvent myself from a very early age to fit in. Became a very chronic people pleaser within that, and I became a chameleon where I could fit in just to stay safe. And there were certain things I experienced growing up, you know, some bullying, some abuse, and kind of bits and pieces along those lines that really kind of tarnished me and made me a terrified little boy, if I was honest. Yes. But I couldn't show that. I couldn't afford to show that because it would leave me kind of really weak on the outside. So there was a real battle within that to try and fit in and allow myself to be me. And there was somewhere, you know, within that growing up within the East End, there was always parties going on. There was always that community kind of spirit. We was taken off to working men's clubs, etc., at weekends and with mum and dad. And dad worked away a lot, so he was kind of in and out of life. But, you know, so then they would go out, etc. And at an early age, I was open to drink. And I remember that first drink just gave me that feeling of relief and quieting my head. And as I grew, I had a capacity to drink. And it became quite a thing within the group of friends I had, that how much I could drink. And it kind of, I suppose it helped me not have to do anything else or get into trouble because I fitted in because I could drink.
Yeah. You know what? That's such an interesting story because I suppose there's so many people out there or young people out there, myself included, when I was at university, same thing. You feel like, you know, you just want to be part of that group. And as you're part of that group, sometimes it's drink, sometimes it's alcohol, all that sort of thing. And it's all about fitting in. But then you turn that around and came to that point where you realised that, you know, it's okay to be you. Just to fast forward, what was that magical point in your life like to realise that you could be you?
You know, it's there's still parts of me even at this stage where I'll be very protective of that me, but there was... And it was quite late in life, but it was just such this freedom of being able to just do what I want to do, dress how I want to dress, even to the point of listening to music that I wanted to listen to. You know, it was all those things that I kind of conformed and told you can't do. And, you know, I always had quite a passion for kind of classical music, but never understood it. To this day, still don't. I couldn't name any of it. Yeah. But that... thought of even attempting to listen to that and to be judged in who do you think you are listening to that kept me away from that beautiful joy that I can happily have playing away in the background while I do some writing or kind of set up programs now, and it's just there. I still don't know who they are. I don't know what they're playing, but I know.
So music is so powerful and so healing, wouldn't you say, Kevin? It's so powerful, isn't it?
Oh, it's incredible. You know, I was gifted. I worked with a charity called One in Four around children's sexual abuse. Yes. And I was very, very gifted to work with a really talented therapist who taught me so much with him when we run these men's groups. And within that, we decided that part of the men's group, we would invite the men to bring a piece of their music into the room, and we would compile a CD that they could then take away. And you realize how powerful that piece of music was, because that's someone sharing themselves with you within that piece of music. They're showing you, this is me, this is what I like, this is a part of me. And that is the most powerful, powerful gift that something as subtle as a piece of music can bring to our lives.
You know what, that's really, really inspiring just to hear that story, because, I mean, I love music as well, and I do feel that music is a real healing process, you know, and can be a real healing process for people in different points of their life. And it's interesting just to visualise that group of men sharing something that's quite special and quite deep. That must have been incredible. I'd like you to tell me another kind of favourite moment in your life, just looking back, because I always find that's quite an interesting question when you ask somebody, what's the favorite moment looking back?
You know, I think somewhere along the lines, it is quite mad, but part of my addiction kind of touched on that whole rave scene. And I remember, like, you know, taking a drug, ecstasy, and being able to dance and to be in rooms where everyone loved each other and everyone wanted to embrace each other. And there was something so freeing within that moment that kind of even led in such a dark place for you to experience such a wonderful gift that this was possible. And I think alongside that, my first visits to India that were really, really incredible, where I was surrounded by so much poverty, yet so much happiness. And so much where people had nothing, yet was prepared to share that nothing with you. You know, they'd share their food with you, they'd share their drink with you, they'd share their home with you, and they'd share their life with you. And it wasn't about what we had or what we haven't had. It wasn't about what we was wearing or what we wasn't wearing. It was about human kindness and community coming together. And that really was a big awakening for me.
Oh, you know what? That is so interesting, because that you chose two moments there, and I found that really interesting, because, you know, within, like you said, within the darkness or within the drug taking, there was a moment where you felt free and you were dancing and you were high, and I suppose a lot of people could identify with that. And it's like, no matter what goes on in our lives, dark or light, there are those moments where if you look back that could be quite magical. And then the whole idea of India and the whole idea of people sharing and coming together and that kind of love within so much poverty, I think that's something that a lot of us could learn from, you know?
Absolutely. It's such a gift, you know, and within that darkness, you know, if you listen to Russell Brand, Russell had turned around quite openly in interviews and say he feels blessed to have had addiction because it saved his life. And I can really associate with that, because without the use of drink and drugs, I wouldn't be here today. I wouldn't have been able to sit with that void inside me. That was my coping mechanism. Yes. And Gabor Mate says it even, you know, he says it wonderfully, that 99% of all addiction, or as he lovely puts it, coping mechanisms, come from a visit to some kind of trauma in our life, where we find these coping mechanisms to help us get through so we don't have to sit with those feelings. Mm. Yet we're so easy to judge within these coping mechanisms. You know, people say, if it's work, it's, oh, they're doing amazing, look how well they're doing career. But they're not realising that that could also embark on the fact that they're not seeing their family and they're not seeing their children grow up. They're just pushing and pushing.
Yes.
At work, it may be the gym, where we're pushing our body to the biggest extremes and causing injury. Mm. But when it's in drink or drugs, it's very easy to point a finger and go, oh, look at them. Look at that drunk on there, or look at that drug addict sleeping on the street. They don't know the story that's taken them there.
Yeah.
They don't understand the trauma that led someone to that place. Because none of us choose, you know, we don't grow up and say, oh, part of my CV is going to be, I'm going to be sleeping under a bridge. Mm. We, it's not part of our life. But something has touched our life so deeply that we cannot face, that leads us to look outside to try and fix that pain.
Mm. Gosh, that's so strong. And just I'm listening to you there, it's you know, life is a journey, isn't it? And looking back, everything you experience makes everything magical, you know, in some ways. And like you say, you being a counsellor now and working with people and alternative therapies, the fact that you've gone through it yourself, you're able to do that job and do it really well. And I always say the same thing with people who work with young offenders or some people who are, say, criminals who have gone through that themselves and then they turn their lives around and come back to a point and they can work with those people because you've gone through it. So when you've lived something and you've experienced it, I think sometimes you're the best person to then help somebody else out of that hole, you know?
Absolutely, because there's that little depth, more, there's more depth in the empathy and the compassion that you can show that person. And, you know, you can tell them it's real and you can tell them and listen from a different set of ears and reflect back to them, you know, this is what I'm hearing. This is what you did. And kind of trying to make them put away those baseball bats they reach for to kind of harm themselves and to blame themselves. You know, life's hard enough without us kind of adding to what they already know.
Yeah. And as I bring this to a close, Kevin, I would like to ask you, what would you like to leave us with? Is there any quote or anything you'd really like to tell my audience or a short story, anything that you'd just like to leave us with?
You know, I think the biggest thing is that never be afraid to inquire. You know, the thing we run away from is a lot easier to deal with than sometimes the thing we pick up to fix it. You know, when we look outside, as I say, within drink, drugs, sex, relationships, shopping, food, whatever it may be, what we're running away from is not as bad as what that could lead to.
Yeah.
So if we could just deal with a problem and be open, be honest, find someone to talk to, someone you trust. Nothing's ever too small to share. If it's upsetting you and it's causing a disease within you, then it's big enough to share with someone else. And obviously we have to be very careful who we share this with. Yeah. We have to find people to where we reach out. But I'd encourage everyone to find the strength and the courage to reach out and to really embrace themselves. You know, and because you are enough. I always say to people, you know, there's two things I kind of try and picture and say, that if we imagine this world as a huge jigsaw puzzle, and every piece of that puzzle is one of us.
Mm.
If we're missing, if one of us is not in there, we cannot complete that puzzle. That's how important we are to this world. And the other thing I like to encourage in people is to give yourself 1 hour each day just for you, because you're worth it and you're that special. Just 1 hour just for you, whether that's a walk, some music, a hot bath, something that just nourishes and gives you what you need to recharge those batteries for you. Because if we keep going to the, you know, the bank of ourselves to keep giving to everyone else, eventually, like most bank accounts, we'll go back and it'll be empty and there'll be nothing left to give. So we also have to look after ourselves, and we can view that sometimes as being very selfish, but it's not. If we don't look after us, then what have we got to give?
Such great advice, Kevin. If you don't look after you, then what else have you got to give? So important. I love that. Everything you've just said there, really great advice. And I'd just like to say, from Tanya the Communication Doctor and from Kevin Hempstead, adios.
Thank you for listening. If you would like to learn more, please visit our website at communicationdoctor.co.uk. To listen to more real stories, don't forget to subscribe.